Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
VR training platforms, like the one developed by Fundamental VR and Orbis International, are helping surgeons train over and over before operating on real patients.
As you practice each skill, the muscle memory starts to develop.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. In the spirit of a good college football upset, probably the most shocking thing that could happen on this program in the year of our Lord 2024 is that I come to you, my fine co-host, Alex Kirshner, Richard Johnson. My name is Stephen Godfrey. This is Split Zone Duo. That I come to you, gentlemen, and I say, I found something to be excited about. I found something that could make us happy in college football as early as this 2024 season. I think that might be the most shocking way I could start a program right now. Agree to disagree? No.
Stephen Godfrey actually finding himself on the verge of joy with something surrounding the sport that he podcasts about for a living. I'm shocked.
I'm scared too, because the topic of today's show is even scarier, that I've found something to be happy about. I'm gonna use Richard's fellas. You ready? Take a deep breath. Fellas. It doesn't work for me, but I still like it.
It's nice. You try it on. It's like a warm winter coat.
I'm not bad. Yeah, I'm into dialects and impressions and accents and stuff. I mean, like, I don't know if I've got that Floridian joy inside of me, but it is tournament season as we record this, and there's always this lazy and uninformed need to rope everything into college basketball. In our corner of the sports world, there was a little bit of crossover in the fact that one SEC commissioner, Sven Gali, evil gangster, Greg Sankey, perhaps.
I have a challenge on this show. Can Stephen Godfrey talk about a mythical or mythical plural college football tournaments without any discussion of the Southeastern Conference, the Big Ten, and or its commissioners, past or present, Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey for purposes of this present exercise?
Yeah. Stephen, let's see if you can do this. We can acknowledge off the hop that the good thing you're about to talk about will be short-lived because of those entities
who are
going to move this thing beyond 2024 and 2025 out of the system that you're excited about to a bigger system with 14 teams where the revenue is going to be hoarded by the big two ugly unnamed conferences that we won't talk about. We can acknowledge that, but that's it.
You guys are doing it now.
I just did it. So you're not allowed. So you are not allowed to say anything for the rest of this show that rhymes with Meg Banky or Roni Rattiti. You're not allowed to say anything that sounds like those words, and you are going to pitch us on why 2024 and 2025 with the 12-team playoff may be more captivating than thought.
Okay, so you let it out of the bag a little bit, but you guys actually, you know, you have access to the show notes that we're all looking at. So, dear listener, if for some reason you ignored the description in the podcast as well as the headline, I like the idea of someone just walking into a random room and hearing a podcast and being surprised. We are talking about, in a positive way, I think, in a hopeful way, in a split zone duo-centric hopeful way, the current 12 team, 2024-2025, college football playoff. Before we get into it, just to review, today and today only, we are just discussing the current 12-team 5-7 format. So if you're new, That is the 5 highest rated conference champions, the 7 at-large bids, that's 12 teams total, with the conference champions that are highest ranked, 1 through 4, not the 5th, 1 through 4, receiving a first round bye. That 5th rated conference champion is not guaranteed or locked in as the 5th seed. We'll get into all that in a second. Let's do the house cleaning first. We are brought to you now, before, always, and forever by our friends at Homefield. We are, I can already tell, 3 wide and very on brand. Rich, no one reps the Homefield brand more than Richard Johnson, of course, going with the classic ash gray Homefield sweatshirt that I think we all have. I stole mine from Alex. Alex, you're going.
You can't see it, it's off camera, but there's a closet that sits to my right, right off camera, that has my winter clothes, my hoodies, my sweaters, my jackets, et cetera, et cetera. 5 minutes before the recording goes, the house shirt that I'm typically wearing on a regular Tuesday morning, what have you, comes off. It goes on to the Peloton that sits to my left, and I reach into the closet and pull Homefield basically at random. This is a pre-recording ritual for yours truly.
Alex, you're going local. I'm going, essentially local, but like we have on, I think, like if there were like Homefield podcaster action figures, you would have a Pitt hoodie on. I would have the side profile, Georgia Southern Eagle. We're very on brand today.
We are. I am wearing a blue.
Neither of which is our alma mater, which I think is why we do a podcast boyhood together.
No, college football is a sport I think a lot of people in this sport legitimately have 2 teams that they care about in reasonably equal measure. And I know Richard grew up where he went to school, so he has
I've never
one.
Loved that.
It just is what it is, Richard. And you know, it's tough for me because Maryland and Pitt are longtime ACC rivals, if you remember the 1 year that they played against each other in that conference, though not in football. So it is tough for me. But you know, the thing that I appreciate about Homefield is that they make good clothes for dozens, over 100 different schools, and I'm a mercenary. I don't care. So I'll wear pretty much anything except maybe Penn State, West Virginia, UVA, Duke. Like I'll wear
good
just,
as the
just
West. All right, this is off the rip, but as well fashioned as that West Virginia collection is, some iconic fucking logos, man. Would you never like because you're the random psychopath who wears like an Auburn hoodie?
No,
to look, Whole Foods or something.
I respect West Virginian culture. I spent summers in Morgantown when I was a kid. What? I'm not going to wear West Virginia University stuff. I'm just not going to do
it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You want them to eat shit, I believe, is how the
No, it goes correct? The other way. It goes the other way.
Well, I don't know if that's – is it reciprocal? Do you tell them to eat shit back?
No, typically – look, I mean, a little peek inside the curtain. Typically, the way that it will work is West Virginia fans will just yell, "Eat shit, Pitt." And then Pitt fans will be like, "Oh, you guys have the internet in West Virginia? How are you typing that to me?"
That's so we're going old school. We're going like old school elitist. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, because Penn State does the elitist thing to Pitt. So Pitt can do the elitist thing to West Virginia. And West Virginia probably does the elitist thing to, I don't know, Glenville State.
The idea of Happy Valley positioning itself as elitist and not the most Aggie ag school that ever agged. I find that very interesting. SCD20, if you want to live this banter, essentially, and wear this banter, SCD20 is the official Split Zone Duo discount code. By the way, you know, congratulations to our friends at Homefield because it is the height of college basketball season. They live a different lifestyle than ours that we celebrate while identifying as college football. You know, they're college basketball, and that's fine. It's totally cool. I was a little downtrodden about the Indiana State situation, too. So shout out to them. Enjoy your tournament. We're going to talk about ours. Alex, tell me about potholes.
NokianTires.com/potholes. You can go there and make your case for who has the worst roads, what region has the worst roads in all of North America. And if you do so, you can become eligible if you are in the U.S. or Canada, which I'm guessing you are, to win a set of Nokian Tires products that come with pothole protection.
Okay.
That's a warranty.
Have you guys ever driven around the city of Memphis, Tennessee?
Yes, actually.
I've actually never been to Memphis. I'd like to go there.
I got locked in the FedEx Forum parking garage after an NCAA tournament game, like my car.
Yeah. I would go, certainly the most, my wife and I have a game when we drive through Memphis, and it's called Memphis Bingo, which is that you see one sort of insane, depraved traffic thing, like someone driving 55 miles an hour down the wrong way routinely on like the wrong way shoulder of an interstate in the proper city of Memphis or Shelby County. I've seen a car on fire while moving. The road quality as well, because they'll just get a couple ice storms a year. It'll break apart that asphalt. And then, you know, guess what? They don't do anything about that ass, if you will. So I would vote Memphis just off the top of my head as far as worst road condition in America.
I stepped in a pothole the other day while running in Los Angeles, California. That was tough. Okay, I don't think I'd ever stepped in a pothole before.
I will say quickly, that's underselling what it is. You were running the Los Angeles Marathon. You weren't just like
my hand kind of went.
What? Well, but what road?
My ham kind of went, and it was almost to the road? End. I think it was Santa Monica Boulevard.
Dude, you're not an LA person yet if you can't clearly describe the route that you were on, like the road you were on, the route you took, and the route you probably should have
taken.
Point
is, there's LA, which is a city that I've been in for not quite a year, still about a half year at this point, does not have the world's greatest public transport infrastructure, so it's put a lot into the roads. But I will say that you get quite a few like bangs when you are driving on the roads out here. They're tough to avoid.
We are a podcast, both legally and spiritually. The best way to support this podcast, which also appears in audio, video, Instagram, TikTok, I don't own it, LinkedIn. You watch this thing on LinkedIn. That's what we're doing. That's how weird we are. The best way to support this, other than supporting our friends at Nokian and Homefield, is to support us directly. And that's by going to splitzoneduo.com and becoming a subscriber today. If you become a subscriber, even in the valley of like late spring, we have a bountiful amount of content. I have two new single wings that I am actually polishing up right now that are going to go out. Those are direct Q&As with me. You can ask about college football. You can ask hardcore coach gossip. You can ask about being a parent. I get a lot of parenting questions. You can ask weird musical questions. Richard, you, I would say, iterated on the coach gossip concept recently for your last subscriber episode. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, it was coach gossip of one sort. We had Madeline Hill, the proprietor of Impersonal Foul, which is a little corner of the internet that Madeline would like to describe as if Bravo and ESPN had a baby. And it was a really interesting conversation. I had a lot of fun doing it with her. We talked everything from Sam Hartman and Marcus Freeman's relative attractiveness to...
It ain't relative, bro. It ain't relative.
Well, it ain't relative.
Yeah.
To Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift and the future of that relationship. The most important takeaway for me is that everything is gossip. Like, we dress up the things that we mean you and Godfrey, me and Godfrey especially, we dress up the work that we do, especially in the coaching cycle. But like, dude, it's all gossip. It's just not on TMZ.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have some fun stuff coming down the, I would say, around the corner, down the pike. And I'll pick a cliche on Substack specifically. Maybe the return of some favorite shows, maybe the addition of some hot, fresh new gossip involving transient athletic directors in the middle of the country. Who knows?
Look, it's Substack. A time of year. It's a time of year for us to do fun things, for us to experiment. We have a bracket competition going for both the men's and women's basketball tournaments going right now, open to our subscribers. All you have to do is sign up at splitsoneduo.com. I wanted to mention that because I like this time of year because there's really not a lot happening on the field. So we get to talk about college football adjacent things that we think you'll be interested in. That's fun to me. And then you kind of lock in as the offseason goes on.
All right. How's this for locking in? I'm going to try and be positive because throughout the course of, I brought an idea to my co-hosts. I worked out some basic data on the 12-team playoff. And in the process of doing that, weirdly, I became positive about what I saw in front of me. So as much as, you know, we can kill the bit about how shocking that is. But to review, we're talking about the 12-team format today specifically because there's still a lot of existential sort of angst around the evolution of the 4 to 12. There's also a lot of existential angst that has nothing to do with the playoff that I feel like is being sort of fed through the playoff, which is the consolidation of power and money.
No, can't do it. Not allowed to do it.
Didn't say it.
Not allowed to do it.
All I did was say it was consolidation of power and money.
Not allowed to do it.
But what Richard's getting at is actually sort of the point of this conversation. College football has always been about selective consumption, right? If we were always some form of an appreciation machine in the media for you guys, there was always a little bit of like, hey, this isn't entirely ethical to consume, but here's a way to enjoy this pocket of it or forego this or try and find a silver lining here or there. To that end, when you isolate this 12-team format, and I was running numbers, getting ready to be mad about revenue, about rev share, about the consolidation, I get a lot of questions on our Substack, splitzoneduo.com, become a subscriber today. What can I look forward to? Hey, I'm a fan of Boston College. I'm a fan of Wake Forest. Like, I don't know what I don't even know what we're going to be doing in 10 years. What can I be excited about? What I would like to sell you today, I think, is that you can get excited about a 12-team playoff format for at least these 2 years. I can't give you anything more than that. So, you know, I feel like I'm a little bit like walking in, be like, we're going to put your dog down, maybe, but these next 2 years could be really fun. We're going to give him a couple cortisone shots in the joints and he can still be Fido for like 2 more years.
I'll tell you one other thing about being excited about these 2 years. I am of the educated opinion that when the football video game comes back later this year, it will ship with a 12-team playoff. And you, obviously it will. I think that's public.
Well,
the other thing though,
your boy had to sign off this week on being named in the credits. So you're welcome.
Oh, actually, you didn't tell me that. But anyway, my point is that while there are a lot of customizable things in these games whenever they come out, like you can put Hawaii in the, well, RIP Pac-12, bad example, but you can put teams and conferences and you can change schedules and you can customize players and all of that. You're going to be playing a 12-team playoff for as many years as you go in dynasty mode in NCAA football.
This is true.
The right situation, the ability to customize that just isn't there. So if you like the 12-team playoff, good, because that's going to be your video gaming playoff for the 40 years that you take like Wyoming off into the future in when the EA Sports game comes out.
Well, I'm sure they could send a software patch or something like that to update your to the
full maybe season. Eventually, maybe.
I can't speak on it because I am technically and legally part of the team that brought you the video.
I'm not withholding. I actually just don't know if that would be possible, but I know it will not be.
I don't know either. They kind of kept me in the dark too. All right. 2023 is a test dummy for what we now know as the locked 5-7-12 team format. This is not news, what I put together. This was already floating around the internet. The problem was we didn't know if we were going to have 5 guarantees, if we're going to have 6 guarantees, and what the slotting would look like. So if we use the most recent college football season as an application for a 12-team format, this, gentlemen, is what you would have received starting in December. You would have had conference championship weekend as normal. And I want to mention that off the rip because there's a lot of conference championship weekend focus that's built into this framework that, again, I find myself feeling positive about. I think what we're actually looking at here is sustained excitement for postseason play starting that first week in December and running for 6 weeks. We're going to see how that feels as we experience it for the first time. But as we go along here, I want you to kind of think about conference championship weekend on the power level specifically, like just the, you know, actually take that back. We'll get to it in a second. I don't want to spoil myself. I don't care if you're a fan of Old Dominion or if you're a fan of Virginia Tech or USC, whatever. Conference championship weekend, I think, might be better when we're done talking about this, I think. All right. So what would you have had? You would have had, first off, the number 12 seed would have been the sort of best group of five team. This is not a new concept in the playoff era. There's been a best group of five team. They're not really called that. They get slotted into a New Year's Six Bowl. So that would have been number 12 Liberty this past year, barely edging out SMU. Do you guys remember that? SMU was like that close. They were really close to beating out Liberty.
The problem was that everybody except Liberty, who won a conference, lost 2 games. So we got stuck watching like a junior varsity team, physically speaking. Like they were really good for what they were in Conference USA, but they were not big enough.
Alex, and could you just be positive for a second?
We had to watch them play Oregon.
Just be positive.
And that's why that happened.
Number 12 Liberty would have started
good,
at
quarterback's good.
At number 5 Florida State. The winner of that game would have gone to play in Tuscaloosa, number 4 Alabama. You would have had number 11 Ole Miss at number 6 Georgia, the winner going to number 3 Texas, number 10 Penn State going back to, or I can't remember where they played that game in the regular season. Number 7 Ohio State, the winner would have gone to number the winner going to number two, Washington. And then number nine, your Missouri Tigers going to Eugene, Oregon, with the winner going to the number one seed, Michigan. I broke these teams down because this is where a lot of angst and concern has been sort of fed in. It's like, what kind of teams are going to be in the playoffs?
Remember.
So I broke them down very quickly. You have your conference champions. And by the way, this was a good year, I think, to play with this because like one through four is fine. Remember, we don't have the Florida State controversy because they exist in the 12th. So all of that consternation is gone. Florida State's in the playoff. And if you would have slotted those teams one through four with Bama above Florida State, but FSU still having a chance, we probably all would have been okay with that for the most part. So I have my okay, sure teams that we feel okay, sure about them continuing their season on vying for a championship. Missouri lost two games by 9 to Georgia and by 10 points to LSU. Okay, sure. Ohio State obviously just lost one game to the number one team in the country. Okay, sure. And then Georgia, basically the same situation, losing to Alabama in the SEC championship by 3 points. Sure. Okay. We're good with those. Then we have the second class citizens. And these are teams that this is where, again, I've received a lot of feedback from listeners and fans saying, like, are we just going to chalk this thing full of teams that we know are inferior to that upper tier?
This is a spot where I want to be very clear.
All right, well, let me lay out these two teams first, okay? Because you helped me build this narrative in the regular season. The two teams I'm talking about specifically in this case study of 12 teams are Ole Miss, who got whomped, truly got their ass kicked by the number four and number six seeded teams. That's Georgia and Alabama. Penn State is a tricky case here because, and this is what I gleaned from Richard specifically and Alex, because I take a lot of my, like, what did I just see vibes from the hurry up every Sunday. Penn State lost to the number one seed and the number seven seed by quote unquote only 11 and 8 points. And I say quote unquote only because we're using this as a data set. I watched every down and every quarter of those two games, Penn State against Ohio State, Penn State against Michigan. Did anyone think at any point in time that Penn State was caliber, was equal, or even had a puncher's chance down a single score? It felt like they had already lost the game. Yeah,
at home now, Richard, against Michigan, Penn State was completely uncompetitive in the sense that Michigan only had to run the ball 30 straight times with two kneel downs.
They just kind of sat on them,
which was insane.
It was a one score game that did not feel very much like a one score game for most of it.
But I want to make this point about this entire system. And I always say this because this is actually to the credit of the people who, you know, the suits in the boardrooms. They've only said this is about participation. They have not fed you the line about Cinderella's and yada, 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 which is done with the basketball tournament. As why the system is what it is. It's just about getting everybody in the dance for myriad reasons. We're not going to go there today, but it's just about getting everybody in the dance. So yeah, if you look at Penn State in this thing and you say, oh, Penn State didn't have a puncher's chance, whatever. Okay. Like they were still roughly one of the best 12 teams in the country and therefore would belong in such a postseason tournament. And we'll see what happens. But part of the beauty of 12 teams and why I actually, Godfrey, me and you were talking about it and you were like, oh, I actually would have been okay with eight. I actually don't want eight. 12 is good because it gives you the four first round buys. You are going to get more.
Yeah.
And as we're going to kind of lay out here, you're going to get a more competitive first round more often than not. And a funner first round because the top four big boys are bide through to the second round.
Yeah. So the big difference, I think, and we're going to get into it, on competitive best on best and funner, more interesting. Obviously, I'm going to lean in one direction. I think Richard's going to lean in the other. Alex, you can break the tie. But before we move on, there's one team I didn't list on purpose because I don't really know how to classify them. I tend to want to go back and forth, and that's Oregon. Oregon loses to Washington in my favorite game of the season, the regular season matchup, and then they lose to Washington in Las Vegas in the conference championship, but they would belong in a 12-team field. I don't know if it's an okay, sure, hey, let's continue this on, or hey, you lost to the same team twice, you should sort of fall to that second-class citizen status. I'm not asking y'all to pick. I'm just saying sometimes it's not that easy to identify, and I think that gray area is what makes all this interesting. Everybody good so far?
Yeah, I also don't know how the committee would actually seed 1 through 12. if they would sort of try to dance around the rematch factor. Like, yeah, Penn State playing, you know, I don't know if they would try to dance around the rematch factor in the first round, or if they would, you know, I don't know. Or if,
so,
theoretically, like you're saying, you brought up the Florida State Alabama example, right? Like, you know, and pretend Jordan Travis is still hurt here. Like, would it knock Florida State out of a bye, or would you still give Florida State the bye? You know, I don't know how the psychology of the committee will change when it's just 1 through 12 versus 1 through 4.
So this is where I want to, for the purpose of this exercise, kind of create some caveats and some asterisks here. We are using data that was created by a subjective human committee, the playoff committee, for the purposes of a four-team playoff. So I'm going to talk a lot about five seeds in a second. I believe, and this isn't so much like Godfrey hates the world conspiratorial, I just think subjectively, the way that a 12-team, it's going to be the same committee structure as we move forward, but the way that they seed 1 through 4, 1 through 12, is just going to be different. Now, one of those reasons why, and again, you guys can call me and say I'm being conspiratorial here, the redundancy alert in this, right? So two of these games that I just mentioned are Big Two rematches. So that's Ole Miss and Georgia, Penn State, Ohio State. I personally didn't need to see either of those games played again, neither of which was close. Seriously, Penn State fans, shut the fuck up.
I can see Penn
one
State.
Thing that's
no, they see know. Penn State, no, Penn State fans know.
I can
Penn
see.
State fans, trust me, I'll give them this. Penn State fans do not
I feel
look
like
back.
SED Penn. We have some good Penn Staters in SED.
Trust
some
me.
Of the good ones, if you will.
You're going to make me defend Penn State fans here, and I'm not pleased about it.
This is already my favorite episode
across,
of the year.
I have not come across a single Penn State fan who looks back on Michigan and Ohio State last year and thinks, "Wow, we were robbed." It's more like, "Wow, that was sad." And it was our coach's fault. Like, there's realism there. There's realism there.
So to that end, what I think is going to happen to the 1 through 12 format versus the 1 through 4 is that we're talking specifically about the 11. We're talking about the 11 and 10 seeds. Here's what I think is going to happen. You can call it a conspiracy or not. I wouldn't have batted an eye about the team placement if you just flipped 10 and 11. And here's what happens. Then you get, in the first round, a refreshing, Ole Miss at Penn State.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, see how
okay.
easy that is to do. That's what I mean. Yeah,
or sorry. I screwed that up. It's Ole Miss at Ohio State. Right. If you flip the 10-11, Ole Miss goes to Columbus. I don't think those teams have ever played each other in history. And then Penn State goes to Athens. Like, shit, yeah, right. Dude. In Richard's world, like, that's good helmet, right?
Ole Miss Ohio State could be fun. They could call that the Archie Bowl. See what I'm saying?
Thank you, Alex.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. So I do think that the final committee rankings are going to kind of magically avoid obvious logjam rematches like
which
that.
Which I also think
round.
Is fine, by the way.
I don't think that's a conspiracy.
Yeah, I also kind of think
that's
fine.
And if you're, Richard, if you're the 10, what does it matter if you're the 11?
Exactly. Like, it doesn't.
I don't think it's going to be that big a deal. I could live to eat those words, and someone can clip that out. We could find out as soon as we get, you know, a 12-team data point in the 24 season. One of the things about rematches is, and this is where certain two particular conferences, you are going to have redundancy. You're going to see matchups again. It's unavoidable. The thing that's super weird about this one is the conference transition that we're experiencing. So just for, and I'm not going to reread everything that would happen. You can find the bracket online. But in the 24 regular season, Texas is playing Georgia. Washington is playing Penn State. Michigan is playing Oregon. Those three games all could have been second round potential. I don't necessarily think that's the worst thing in the world, boys. It's just, if you have teams that are advancing out of a field of 12 to play those four byes, and they've earned it to that point, that's the rematch that we're faced with. The NFL routinely plays, you know, features playoff games with teams meeting for the third time in that season. I guess that's just part of it.
It is.
I don't know if anyone wants to object.
It's fine. It's going to be fine. I think I agree with avoiding them in the first round if you can. I think that's a good idea. I think that works. Eventually, you are going to get rematches. I think rematches are fine. I think people complain about them a lot more than in actuality. Again, the rematch example that you gave, Washington and Oregon, produced two of the best regular season non-postseason games of the year.
I quite enjoyed them. I want to move to the G5 plight because our core audience has been trained in and or just came to our community sharing the idea of whole hog college football consumption. And gosh, things look brutal right now. So this is the G5 plight. And it sort of ends up being good if you just hang tight. If you're sitting here listening to this and you can't believe I just said that, take a walk with me for a second, okay? So in this model, Liberty is the number 23 team in the actual final rankings. They would vault by virtue of being the conference champion that gets plugged in to the number 12 team, knocking out Oklahoma. I want you to remember that, because when we talk about best on best in a little while, that knocks out a 10-2 Oklahoma team who, if you don't remember, lost Bedlam and lost to Kansas and didn't even make the Big 12 championship game. Okay, that's the team that Liberty replaces to become the 12th seed. It is highly unlikely in this format, highly, highly 99.9% unlikely that a group of five team, as we have defined them historically, will ever host a playoff game. Okay, it's highly unlikely. All right,
I would agree.
It is highly unlikely that
that would have to be, they'd have to be eight or higher.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen. Let's be honest. Because if you go back and look at the group of five rankings outside of the Cincinnati aberration, and I'm going to get to this in a second, by and large, we're encouraging these teams to schedule up and schedule well. They're trying to get paycheck games. They're trying to show off. Remember how Cincinnati got to where they were, right? They beat Notre Dame, right? So they played really good teams. I think they beat someone else in the old Power Five structure. I can't remember who it was off the top of my head, but they did everything that they could. The model is not made for a group of five team to host or to really ever enter high rated, in my opinion, higher than this 12 seed. It's not impossible, Alex. It's just highly unlikely.
This gets into an interesting bit of committee psychoanalysis that I'm excited to see proven out one way or the other, because we won't have to speculate about it. I mean, there will be a bit of speculation involved, but I think we'll sort of know. There have been, as I know you know, and as listeners yelling at their car radios probably know, a few group of five teams that have gone through the playoff selection Sunday ranking day ranked higher than 12, and not just Cincinnati, but UCF. I think twice. UCF was as high as 7 the year that they played LSU in the Fiesta Bowl, and LSU was 11 in that game. Your thought seems to be that if the committee doesn't have to rank a group of five team any higher than 12 in order to include them in the playoff, then they just won't. Like, basically that they're correct, arbitrarily doing it for appearances, and that if the playoff, yes, were 12 teams in 2018, then UCF would have been ranked 12 instead of ranked 7.
I think
they ranked them seven because they wanted to throw them a little bone after keeping them out of the playoff. That is the kind of thing that I could see those bureaucrats doing. But also, I think if there's an undefeated team from the American either of the next 2 years, it would be kind of weird for them not to be like 10, wouldn't it?
So, by the way, I just double checked. That Cincinnati team that stands out as sort of the aberration in history, the other, they beat Indiana. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh when I say it. They beat Indiana, a number 9 Notre Dame team, and then also a ranked number 21 Houston team. So that was what catapulted them in. Now, let's talk about that for a second before I kind of toss it out as what it will ultimately be, which is an aberration in history. 21 Cincinnati is going to stand out forever because there is no pressure to include a G5 team. There is no pressure on a week-to-week to get them slotted near that 5 position or near that 6 position to make it look like a thing that you actually don't care about, which we know they don't care about, right? We know what the financial concerns are. We know how the deck is loaded. So now that they are disabused of that and they've got this sort of like, you know, whatever you want to call it, sort of like pat on the head slot or their version of group of five affirmative action or whatever, they're not going to do that. I fully believe that they're not going to do that, which honestly isn't the end of the world. By the way, it is funny too, because in this format, Cincinnati is such an aberration. Before I move on talking about the Bearcats, they actually could not have moved them lower in that format because the number 5 team that they beat out was Notre Dame, who they beat head to head. It's just something that I don't think we'll ever see in college football in our lifetimes again. Okay, this is where I want you to feel positive if you're a group of five fan. What's going to happen in the new format, in my opinion, is that you're going to live in that 12 spot. 12th team in. Sounds terrible at first, okay? 4 teams go to a bye, so you're going to start off with the 5th seed. You're the 12th team, and you're going to play the 12-5 game, all right? That's not terrible, to be honest, okay? I'm going to go through, we pulled out Cincinnati, obviously, from the 21 season. I'm going to go through a list real fast, And we're going to talk about the winnable games based off of the previous playoff data here. And this is actually when I kind of ran into our SCD Slack room and said, like, this is interesting. This is fun. This is something that I think an entire other half of college football can get excited about. There are some games that my co-host can see that I bolded as potential upsets. This first one is not, because you had an extremely, the number five seed in 2022 is an extremely pissed off and talented Alabama team who, as much as we love Tulane, that would not have gone well. Ask K-State in the Sugar Bowl. That was a spite killing. In 2020, again, we're skipping over 21, Cincinnati would have opened at number five, Texas A&M. Real fast, boys, what do you remember about that Jimbo Fisher? Now, 2020 is the asterisk of all asterisks, but are you telling me that Cincinnati team that traded blows with Georgia in the Peach Bowl could not have gone into College Station against that Jimbo Fisher offense and at least held serve?
Yeah, I'm digging it. I found, just very quickly for context purposes, on the games that we're about to talk through, I've dug up, and this is approximate, it's a little rough and it's quick and dirty, but I've dug up what, like, our old pal Bill C's SP Plus system would have given as, like, the rough spread to the game. So Tulane and Bama, the rough spread is, like, 20 points. Gee, I bet you'll never guess who's the favorite in that one. But in the 2020 Cincy and A&M game we're talking about here, mythically, it's actually even. Roughly even. So, all right, cool. All right.
I don't know how much, unless you're a Georgia fan, you remember the specific 2019 Georgia Bulldogs. They were the fifth seed. They would have hosted Memphis. That's, again, and it's hard to disabuse yourself from the back-to-back national championship teams, but that's not the caliber of Georgia that we're talking about here. That feels like an exciting, watchable, and potentially winnable game, which is all I think you can ask for at this
point.
That
was, yeah.
All right. So
that was the, I'm trying to think, was that Stetson Bennett's first year?
I believe so.
Because there were so many goddamn Stetson Bennett years.
There's a lot of Georgia sort of coming. No, there's a lot of like teenage.
That's a Fromm year. That was Fromm's last year because Fromm played next year.
There's a lot of like almost there awkward teenage years Georgia teams on this list. So 2018, again, number five Georgia. By the way, these back-to-back Georgia teams both lost the conference championship game. In 2018, they would have played number 12 UCF. Richard, you had that simmed as what, 25-17, I assume, Georgia?
Yes, 25-17, Jordan.
So 25-17, that's a ball game, folks. And whether you like it or not, those UCF teams were lightning fast and dangerous. Again, UCF in 2017 would have played Ohio State. That's an Ohio State team that did not make the conference championship, if I recall. 26-17, Richard, Ohio State's favored in FPI.
Yes.
Again, all I'm asking for here is competitive and interesting ball game. Maybe something weird happens with turnovers or injuries. This one I feel like is not as much of a guarantee, which is the Western Michigan year in 2017. They would have come in, Western Michigan under PJ Fleck would have been the 12 seed, going to number five, Penn State. You actually, the spread here, you have a set with 17 to 12,
yeah,
Penn State.
I was.
That seems weird.
This is, again, it's rough, it's approximate, and this is now what FPI spat out for me. I don't know about that. Like, this is
it doesn't make sense at
that's
all.
That's your three loss Penn State team that won the Big Ten with Saquon and Trace McSorley.
McSorley.
I think Allen Robinson was on the team, yeah. Maybe. Like, a good football team. I don't
Wasn't
know.
Godwin on that team?
Huh?
Yeah, like Godwin. I think Godwin was their leading receiver. I think
don't know.
Like that seems beastly. 2015, possibly the one matchup in this where I'm going to flat out pick the Group of Five team. It would have been the Tom Herman grills living on social media, recruiting Ed Oliver. I believe it was Derek King was the quarterback. Houston would have gone to that number five Iowa team who lost the Big Ten championship to Michigan State on that crazy long drive. And Iowa fans were, I was at that game, and Iowa fans were celebrating in the parking lot losing because they weren't the number four sacrificial lamb to Alabama in the Cotton Bowl playoff. They got to go to the Rose, where Stanford promptly beat their ass. I fully believe Houston would have beaten Iowa even going into Iowa City in the first round. And FPI has that even, Richard?
Yes, thereabouts. I am All right. very, very interested in stylistically how this game would have played out, which is to say Iowa is in it. I think Iowa would take great pleasure in finding a way for its offensive line to dominate one Edward Oliver, despite his strength as a player.
The last one, we're stretching way back into history. This is prime Boise, peak Boise. Brian Harsin's still the head coach. This was the year, if you recall, they just evaporated Arizona in the Rose Bowl. Number 12, Boise would have gone to number 5, Baylor. Baylor would have been fresh from that Baylor-TCU sort of canceling the rivalry, canceling each other out of the inaugural playoff bracket. 23-10 Baylor and FPI. Again, all I'm asking for here, and what I think we've received in almost every one of these matchups, is a quality and is quality engagement product that's decent enough to watch. And also, you can't, as you scroll through here, with maybe one or two tiny exceptions, say that the 12 seed at least has a puncher's chance. And that was what I did not, that's what I did not expect when I was loading these up initially.
You would, I think most years. The thing is that, and I hope that Liberty was not a canary in the coal mine here, but I think that your backward-looking exercise makes a lot of sense. I'm wondering if the portal and a player compensation world changes this significantly. Yeah. Liberty is not a great sign. And as you know, like, I don't like Liberty. I root against them. Fuck those guys. Like, I will declare my bias on that. But like, so you can get out of the way. Like, yes, I do feel that way about them. But trust that I'm going to do my best to evaluate them somewhat soberly. Liberty, which is a pretty well-moneyed Group of Five program, was little kids physically against Oregon last year. And Godfrey, like, you told me before the game, like, that you had talked to someone, I think, on the Oregon staff who, like, had looked at that film and was like, oh boy, this is going to be easy.
Boring was the word.
Like, they're just, you know, the 2014 Boise team, physically, they could bang with a Big 12 team, like Baylor, absolutely. Yeah. But now, how many teams are there in the Group of Five in any given year that just physically have not had their rosters picked over and are going to be able to thump with a 5 seed in this 12-team playoff? Liberty absolutely could not. You know, that, it was just they were too small. They were there was no chance, even with Caden Salter being one of the better quarterbacks in the country, hell, maybe being as good as Bo Nix, that Liberty could have competed in that game. It was not going to happen.
Remember,
and
Alex,
there are Group of Five programs that are built for it, like. You know, yes. Like Ryan Silverfield's an offensive line coach. Memphis can play a bit of physical football. Tulane the last few years, and under John Summerall going forward, they could probably play some physical football. But I'm a little scared that this backward-looking exercise may not apply going forward because power fours are going to go shopping down these rosters.
What if it was okay? But what? So what if it was the Tulane team from a year prior? How would you feel? And not Liberty who gets in on kind of like
exactly.
a committee technicality.
And we saw that. We saw what Tulane did to USC and. You get a physical Group of Five team against a defense coordinated by Alex Grinch, and you could have some fun, as we saw at the 2022 season's Cotton Bowl. So, like I say, I hope that it's more of that and less of Liberty in multiple ways.
The second thing that I was genuinely excited by was something that almost feels like it shouldn't exist because of the domination of he who shall not be spoken of or conferences who shall not be named. It's kind of crazy to me that this is still on paper, even for the next 2 years. Let me get into it. Everything in college football, undoubtedly right now, is lined up against teams who are not in the Power Two, without argument. You can even throw Notre Dame into that now. But right now, for the next 2 years, if you happen to win the ACC or the Big 12, for the time being, dude, you're looking at a bye and a home game in the playoffs. You're looking at a bye and a home game in the playoffs. Not locked, but close to it, all right? So the team I immediately started thinking about was that red-hot 2022 TCU program, who now doesn't have to fight with Texas and Oklahoma, right? Conference is bigger, maybe not arguably better in terms of quality overall. Or let's just say hypothetically we're talking about, oh, I don't know, an ACC champion who might need to get healthy at the quarterback position for a week going into the postseason. Shudder to think. So if you assume, and I will, again, I'm assuming bias, I'm assuming the negative thing, that the ACC and Big 12 champions are always going to be vying for the number 3 and number 4 spots, which are byes, right? That means they're getting that 5-12 game or that 6-11 game that we just talked about, which is manageable in a lot of cases, right? The interesting thing about this, Richard, to go back to that Power Two mentality of stacking the deck, the 5 and 6 seeds I didn't run this out into a table, but this is more anecdotal. If you go back to those 5-12 games we looked at, I put in parentheses, lost conference championship, lost conference championship, lost conference championship. There's, again, an almost guarantee that the fives and the sixes are going to be losers of the conference championships for the Power Two. Now, at the beginning of this spiel, I said, hey, remember conference championship weekend? It's funny to me because even when I get to my most cynical state, I have to credit the SEC championship here because there was such a concerted effort to protect a true cash cow for that conference. I don't think people realize how beneficial and profitable the SEC championship is. The economic impact studies vary wildly because that's usually junk math. But you have a guaranteed sold out NFL stadium with playoff level television ratings and two brand names in it guaranteed. But the importance of that game is now discernible on paper in a way that it hasn't been before, which is chances are, unless things are kind of weird, you're not going to lose your postseason hopes if you lose that game. But damn, if you are not going to get knocked down the ladder into a world of headaches.
You will note.
Okay.
I will say the funny thing is you will note. There is one conference champion loser that is not on this list in the year 2021. No. It was those Georgia Bulldogs, which were not the awkward preteen Georgia Bulldogs. It was the fully formed war machine that just ran into Bryce Young on a certain afternoon.
This kind of makes me feel good. This kind of makes me feel positive about things because if you go through and you think about every conference championship game right now, start with any of them. Like Liberty needed their conference championship game. Okay. If you're on the cusp and you're putting together a resume as like a Boise team, you need the Mountain West championship game. If you are trying to be perfect, like Western Michigan was, you need the conference championship game and so on and so on. Right. Go to a program like Tulane who was about to play for a conference championship when their head coach Willie Fritz was offered Georgia Tech. And he said, no, because he felt like, hey, this thing is not complete yet. It's not a bowl. There's a specific attention when I look at the details of this towards protecting that weekend. Well, what does that mean? To me, it means that you're starting the postseason the first Saturday in December and you're running it until mid-January, which, by the way, if you haven't looked at your calendars, y'all, if you're like a Bama, well, maybe not Bama, if you're like a Georgia or Ohio State or Michigan fan or whatever, like national championships a lot later this coming season. You should check that out. It's going to be like 6 whole weeks of this.
Yeah, it's like the divisional weekend or something.
We're working extra, boys. Yeah. We're working extra. So I feel good about that. I think that this is like the best case scenario amidst what is inarguably a shitstorm of uncertainty at every other level of the sport. So the last thing to do here is to kind of heat check what it is we want out of this thing. There are things that we know we're going to deal with. We're going to deal with more Power 2 teams getting in, and we're going to deal with the token G5 team, and we're going to see bias, and we're going to see yada yada, all this stuff, right? And oh, there's weird Notre Dame who still has never joined a conference, and how do they fit in? It's not fair to them, but they're not fair to us. There's three basic arguments that I've seen in media, social, you know, podcast, radio, et cetera, which is, do we want best on best, which I sort of call the NFL model, and Richard, I'm going to tee you up in a second. Do we want holistic or representation oriented? And that I kind of thought about the way the Oscars has been the last 5 or 6 years of like, we're going to expand the field to 10 best picture. And every year we're going to just silently and quietly ensure that there are 2 to 3 large grossing recognizable brand name films in that best picture category to get the largest audience possible to tune in. And then the third one is the sort of, do we want a weird thing? Do we want the Cinderella? And this comes from, which is sort of the note this week and of note right now in March, comparisons to the basketball tournament. There are arguments for and deep flaws in all three of these. Richard, I want to start with best on best. Right. So let's toss out fuck Liberty, fuck Tulane, fuck Houston, that fun team, and fuck all those Cincinnati teams. Fuck them. Best on best. Should that be the model?
Would your best on best have one? Like one?
No, I'm saying
none. All right.
What I'm saying is you lean into this sort of helmet culture of language. Well, come on, y'all. You know that Liberty's not as good as that 12 seeded 10-2 Oklahoma team.
Go ahead, Alex.
This is not what college football is trying to do is not in promotion of a quote unquote best on best playoff. And I don't need it to be. If this is what we're doing, but like anything beyond arguably the BCS,
like beyond the BCS, is best plus on best. One is not
like,
best on best.
I mean, I was going to do this exercise at the end of the show, but just because I listed it out, and maybe this furthers the point, the teams that have finished fifth just outside the playoff ranking through the first decade of this thing, not a single one of them was going to win a national championship. 2014 Baylor, 2015 Iowa, 2016 Penn State. That one, I would give it a maybe. 2017 Ohio State, no. They gave up 55 points to Iowa. Greg Schiano was their defensive coordinator. 2018 Georgia got destroyed by LSU and lost to Bama's backup quarterback in the SEC championship game. Yes, it's an NFL backup quarterback, but yes. 2019 Georgia that got burrowed, was never going to beat LSU in a rematch in a playoff. 2020 A&M, pretty self-explanatory. 2021 Notre Dame that lost to Cincinnati, which got beaten up pretty good by Bama. 2022 Bama, that's the only one that maybe could have done it. And 2023 FSU, which should have been in but didn't really have a chance because they were hurt.
So
any deeper that we go beyond like literally the BCS or certainly the 14 playoff, we can dispense that college football's playoff is just supposed to be only the mega elites, because we're already not doing that. So I think that option is out in terms of what we want the playoff to be.
Here's one caveat in that I could give you. And this is more of a kind of a rankings ball thing. But if you're setting up with two conferences that now have everybody in them, in which case, I literally pick one of them out of a hat, Texas. Texas loses to Georgia in week four. And then loses to Oklahoma in Red River, and then sprints through the rest of the season undefeated, has two losses, and then is like a team that in December you're like, oh shit, like Texas turned it on. They finish number five, and they, you know what I'm kind of getting at? That's where I think things may fall a little bit differently in conferences where more losses are going to be taken because there are more good teams at the top.
Okay. So it sounds like best on best should not even be something that's pursued, that there's really no argument for plugging in and saying, hey, that Oklahoma team for sure was better than Liberty, or I don't have the other ones after that, but like, hey, that power two team that had two or three losses is definitely better than, you know, Tulane or Boise or whomever. We good with that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. The holistic representation. I don't know which one of you psychos came up with the suggestion here in the notes. However, this is a conversation. This is something that people think should happen, which is basically however many conferences exist, there should be some sort of representation from as wide of a spectrum as possible as whatever it is we define the FBS to be.
This is actually my idea, funny enough. If you want a purely merit-based college football playoff, it's going to sound kind of silly, but you make it a relatively straight conference champions competition. It's sort of the initial idea behind the Champions League in Europe before the mid-90s happened and more teams from more leagues got in. You can make it a 12-teamer if you want to kind of preserve the top fours getting byes. Why don't you just throw the 9 conference champions in, and then you can have your 3 at-larges for a Notre Dame or a good Georgia who doesn't win a conference championship game, or you know what I mean. But, you know, that's kind of the most merit-based system that finds a way to do what everybody wants, which is preserve the regular season and preserve the conference championship games as special. This would absolutely do that to the extreme. Now, of course, I do want to talk, like, last year's conference champions are, you'd get SMU, Florida State, Michigan, Texas, Liberty, Miami of Ohio, Boise, Alabama, and Troy, right? And then your at-larges would be, Chuck Oregon in there, Georgia, a couple of those, would be your.
No, there's only three, right?
Yeah, you only so have room for three.
Nine conference championships and three at largest. So it would be what? Georgia, Oregon,
Ohio State.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, that first round, Richard. Holy shit.
You would have some absolute belters.
SoCon Saturday.
In that first round. Yeah.
SoCon Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. That. All right. I like where we're going here in so much as we don't want to lean too hard in either direction. Best on best doesn't make sense after a certain point. I think to Alex's point, which is the sneaky rebuke of expanding the playoff at all, which is that the 5-6 would have the 5-6-7 on would, in, at least so far as we've seen, would not have had a chance to win the national championship. But we won't. That's a different argument for a different day. And then also the representation thing kind of leads into the weird slash Cinderella model. And here's why. I'll play this straight for a second and then you guys can take it apart. The reality is that we have got to stop comparing apples to oranges. But just for the sake of it, because it's such a popular thing to do, let me walk this out. Does college football or should college football have a Butler or have a Vermont or a Maryland, Baltimore County? Or more realistically, can we make it fair for our version of Gonzaga? Like Gonzaga, I think, is a 5 seed going into the 2024 men's tournament right now, which is pretty low for them. Some years they've been a 1 or a 2. They obviously don't come from a traditional power conference, but they are a brand. They're a power brand in college basketball at this point, right? So you would think Tulane. You would think Boise back in the day, maybe a UCF, Houston, Cincinnati before they moved to the Big 12. That's who I'm talking about, okay? The basketball tournament, not the season, the basketball tournament benefits tremendously from these narratives that are specifically about David and Goliath, right? We get that for a sustained window sometimes of 3 to 4 weeks in the full sports media cycle. That's why I know that UMBC is the Retrievers, right? Yeah. Because do you guys remember that Twitter account exploding after they beat Virginia? I am not a basketball fan. I'm not a college basketball fan. I know where I was when I was watching, like, I think it was Bucknell beat Syracuse when Vermont made a run or when Wisconsin Green Bay with Bruce Pearl, like those things stick out. Brad Stevens and Butler.
Yeah, I was at a bachelor party last year watching FDU beat Purdue. Like we were going to go out and we like stopped to watch the game. You know what I mean? Like college basketball, I think we'll always have that.
Yes.
Have that
Florida appeal. Gulf Coast. Was it Slam?
Dunk You.
Dunk You. Like, you know, in my misbegotten collegiate years in early 20s, like that was what you did on those weekends was just like get drunk and find that sort of ironic, weird school that you didn't even know what state they were in and you cheered for them. That's a basketball-centric mindset. So here's the sad reality and the rebuttal. And then I'll hand it off to Richard to put a little bit of a nail in a little bit of a coffin. This isn't basketball. And the reality is this, and this is the guy wearing the Georgia Southern gear, and I, Lord knows I've carried so many crosses for the Group of Five. We have never seen a Group of Five football team in the FBS slay a Goliath 3 to 4 times in a row, in a month. This is a physical, violent and fast game that simulates a car crash every 2 seconds. It is not basketball. All right. Boise is sort of the godfather archetype, traditional sort of like space opera hero underdog that we ascribe. And that is because of that Fiesta Bowl. It's because of the Statue of Liberty play. It's because of the dude, Ian, I can't remember his last name anymore because it's been so many years, who proposes to the cheerleader girlfriend after he runs.
Ian Johnson. Like,
but that game.
Ian Johnson.
Godfrey, think about, I'm not calling that game a fluke, but think about what it took for them to win sink shit, that
for
game.
Sure. Yeah.
Remember.
It took a Statue of Liberty play.
Right. And a hook and ladder.
It took a Statue of Liberty play.
Like, and again, like that's the difference.
So Richard, who won the national title that year?
What year was that?
Your alma mater.
Florida. Yeah, it's 2006. Florida.
Your alma mater. So this is where I want to try and hold to a fact and an idea that seem to conflict and try and hold them in equal measure. Because I think when you do that and you hold those two things simultaneously and give enough intellectual respect to both, that's when you get the best of this sport, which is that moment is one of the best and, in my opinion, most important moments in modern college football history when Boise State beats Oklahoma. I have nothing against the Sooners. It was just that this weird Idaho blue turf stepchild former community college university cobbles together this insane blueprint of football, both in terms of personnel and marketing and scheme. And they do go out and kill a helmet, traditional blue-blooded name on a huge stage. That's amazing. That's narrative. It's emotional engagement. However, in any system now, that Boise State team would have had to most certainly gone on to play the next week some combination of that Troy Smith Ohio State team, a Michigan team with, I think it only had one or two losses that year.
No, it was a Michigan team that everybody was like, oh, they should rematch Ohio State in the national championship game.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Ohio State-Michigan game in 2006, I believe. Yeah, it's 2000. It's the 2006. There have been better games since then, but at the time, that was a monumental game. Yeah. So one or both of those teams and or the LSU team that lost to Florida in that amazing – that's not the Jacob. No, that's like the Tebow.
Yeah.
That's like the Tebow – the Tebow sort of arrives game in 2006. Because the following year is the Jacob Hester year. Boise State. 4 weeks in a row, 3 weeks in a row? Come on, man. Like, when you combine the fact that the group of five will probably never have like a top four bye, like they're probably not going to get a week off or even like a high seeded home game, it feels impossible to expect basketball Cinderella in a sport that's just simply too violent to allow that much hope. And I'm not trying to be painful or myopic. I'm just trying to say it's good to have that moment. And it's also good to have the reality of the sport.
One thing that I think people discount or maybe forget about basketball Cinderellas is the basketball Cinderellas can happen in minor part because you can shock because you play two games in 3 days, right? So you can have the first one when you shock the world or whatever, and then you can advance because you're playing a tired team, you know, whatever. They have not had enough time to plan and scheme for you in the basketball sense. But then a lot of times with these Cinderellas, you win the first two, then what happens in the Sweet 16? And even if you make a run, you get to the Final Four, and then what happens when one of the best 5, 6, 7 teams in the nation gets a week between the Elite Eight and the Final Four to look
dude,
at you but, and scheme
but,
for you.
Butler but, has never won a national title.
Sure, Butler came, like, you know.
None of those teams that I just rattled off, they you know what happens? They always lose to Duke or to Kentucky or to whatever.
Well, I will note that Butler had him. And if Gordon Hayward's shot hits the angle of the rim like a degree differently, then Butler wins the national championship. But I do think we're going to make a trade-off here. And I think I'm okay with this trade-off. The trade-off is going to be that Cinderella stories will end the way that they end in college basketball, and you won't be able to myth make, which is fun. Like, you won't be able to say they would have had them if they had the chance.
Because
you
know, the problem
we're not
gonna
be able to say that.
Like, Liberty goes on the road to Oregon, and Bo Nix throws four picks, and Liberty wins that game in the first round. And then Liberty goes to Georgia, pick one out of the hat.
Right. And then it's going to
fucking vaporize by 40 points, man.
And that's going to be.
Isn't that the best of both worlds, though?
Well, I would make this point. That is the trade, is that you will not get to end on the picking Bo Nix four times. You'll end on what happens in Athens. But I think the trade is that this is going to make end of season games in group of five stadiums a way bigger deal. Imagine if the American Championship game last year between Tulane and SMU, which was a bit of a downer because I think one or both had two losses by that point. I think SMU already had two losses by that point. SMU's quarterback was injured, and it wasn't the same vibe as like UCF versus USF back in 2017, that year that the war on I-4 was like the best game of the year. Imagine though, if you can supercharge every late season game between contenders in the American, in the Sun Belt, in the Mountain West, and know that there's a chance on the line to get to kill a Goliath, not just in what you might call the token NY6 Bowl, but in the tournament. Like, relatedly, that's the same reason why it would be such a travesty if auto bids were to be removed from any conference in Division I for the basketball tournaments. It's because when you have a chance to be in the tournament, the end of the season just matters a lot more because you can dream. And I'm cool with getting that in exchange for the Ian Johnson story doesn't end with the proposal, but it ends with Boise then getting destroyed by Michigan. I'm okay with that. But everything in life takes trade-offs. Everything in life takes trade-offs.
There is a romantic notion here that Alex is getting at that I think also actually happens over in England with the FA Cup, which is like the original straight knockout soccer competition, right? To take the most random, like, second tier team, like Coventry City, which is a team that unless you're a real soccer head, you have no idea what I'm talking about. Godfrey, you have no idea what I'm talking about.
I've been to Coventry, but I didn't even know they had a soccer
Incredible. Team. So Coventry City, long story short, is a team that sometimes is in the Premier League at the bottom of it, sometimes not. But let's say they're in Division Two, but they are playing in the FA Cup and they get a chance to go play Manchester United. Like that then becomes a thing. Like they get it's a day out. Maybe they score two goals. They probably lose because it's Manchester United. Like you're gonna have that be a thing. And because of home and homes, it's a little bit different in college football. And you know, if you're SMU, you may see your team play at insert wherever. SMU is a bad example because now they're in the ACC, so whatever. But you know what I mean. Like it take your AAC team and you do get a chance to. Hey, you know, you get to hope, you get to dream, you get to say, hey, we're going to go on a hell of a road trip to USC or wherever the hell in round one and like roll the dice and who knows what happens.
Speaking of that, Richard, I've been playing around for like the last 2 days since I wrote out these show notes of like, you know, I genuinely want to leave this on a positive because I do feel like we're constantly feeling the temperature of our audience and like, foundations are shook for completely understandable reasons. Whether or not you're a diehard fan of a Tiffany school or you do whole hog or you are just a Wobegon, you know, BC Wake, whatever fan, like it's hard to understand what to feel good about. The sheer weirdness, and like we celebrate a lot of things in this sport, but we tend to really rally and reinvigorate our love for college football around weirdness, like 2007, right? We love 2007. Imagine, and like this one was just off the dome. It's a little far-fetched, maybe for this coming year, but let's just say like Willie Fritz is as good a coach as we know he is, and Houston wins a wide open Big 12 in like 2025. Texas loses the SEC championship, and they have to be the 5 seed against number 12 SMU in the first round, and the winner goes to Houston. The state of Texas would spend 2-3 weeks in a state of absolute just fervor. It would be amazing. It would be everything that we could have asked for out of this format, what I just described. SMU at Texas in the first round, winner goes to Houston. Like, that's entirely possible. That's something that I just laid out. Or what about Tulane at LSU in the first round? Like, and I know I'm doing in-state here as a bit, but there's a lot of fun here. There's a lot of potential here. And, you know, somewhat selfishly as a year-round podcaster of one sport, I know you two can relate, like there's a lot of just like conversation topic that can start, I really think, as early as like going into rivalry weekend, Thanksgiving. So you're going to have this dominant narrative from Thanksgiving until, I mean, almost the 1st of February. Did you guys say that the national title, like I didn't look at and how it coincides with the NFL, but is this thing's going to carry through into the NFL playoffs?
Yes. Yeah, it ends January 20th of 2025. Yeah.
That is the Monday, okay, so after the divisional round of the
NFL. So we're talking about, I mean, and I do think this, to close out on a positive and to move it away from basketball. Basketball's regular season is pretty brutal at the collegiate level in terms of building interest and narrative. And the television ratings reflect this. And the attendance reflects this. You're going to start to, that go home week before rivalries in like the MAC and the Sun Belt have technical playoff implications. Because one of those teams that are hopeful to get that 12 seed would have to, you know, get into the MAC championship, get into the Sun Belt championship, what have you, whatever, to compete. It's going to do what we thought was a bad thing. And for years, we've heard our own fans and listeners say, I'm so sick of hearing about the playoff every week. The fucking selection committee show fucking sucks. And like, I'm a Toledo fan. I just want to watch the Toledo game on a Wednesday night and they're fucking interrupting. I get that. But in theory, now Toledo's alive, right? An undefeated Toledo who's taking care of business. And by the way, at the height of Boise Mania, all Brian Harsin or Peterson before him ever said was, if we're undefeated, we should be in the conversation. That's all he ever said. So now you get that. Like now I think, I mean, off the dome, guys, like I think you're looking at 40, maybe 50 schools as you approach Thanksgiving. Maybe Thanksgiving's too much, but as you approach Halloween with like a realistic path.
It's at least 20.
And I feel like that's good.
Yeah. It's at least 20, maybe more. And I think that's good too.
I'm sorry for being so positive.
Yeah, tune in next week for regular scheduled programming.